So when you were in America, right? See, I've done a lot on the East Coast and a lot on the West Coast, but I did find America to be very culturally confusing.
Yes, I was in the Midwest, so it was a very unique experience culturally. There were quite a few international students on the soccer team, and two of them left. They just could not do the culture. It is the Bible Belt type culture in the Midwest. So it's just the conversations, even we would have a lunch, were so intense and deep because everyone was, not everyone, but a lot of the time people were trying to convert you into their beliefs and their values. And from there was an Australian and a Swede, so it was kind of a lot more liberal. People don't really want to push their values onto other people, and they didn't like it, so they ended up leaving, which is the kind of, looking back at it, I was like, oh, they're just leaving because they can't hack it, they don't want to see it out to the end. But if you're in an environment where everything is going against your values and your beliefs, how could you stay? So yeah.
No, 100%. And that knowing sort of where you had been, I've never been to that part of the States, but I had a an athlete, Toby Lettman, who was at TCU, so Texas Christian University. You tell me some wild stories, like, and all, like, yeah, I mean, he's a big black dude playing American football in Texas, like. It just need don't have to say any more about that. But so because not many people end up playing sport in America from the UK, especially that like that I know. So how did you end up there being converted into an absolute devout Christian?
People tried really hard. People tried really hard. I had a boyfriend over there, and not most of the time was spent trying to convert, which was, in hindsight, I kind of just used him for his car, but it was a worthwhile trade. But yeah, back to the question. I mean, I played football my whole life, and girls, in order to play at the highest level, thought that going to America would be the opportunity to get the facilities and the coaching and everything that goes along with the American dream of college sports. So it was kind of like, my dad was said, oh, this would be a good idea. And my dad, anything he says is kind of word in my head. It still is. So I thought, yeah, it sounds a bit scary, but it's maybe 4 years out because you have to start really early looking for colleges and stuff like that and doing trials. So it was always a bit of a distant thing that, oh yeah, I'll give it a go, see if I get any offers. And then ended up going to these trials. Everywhere I went, I was pretty much the best player on the trial squad. But there were so many girls, I did not realize how many would try and go over there. So did the trials. It got to maybe 2 years before I would be going to college. I had a couple of offers from schools, but a couple of them, other people I knew who I'd played with, were going over there. So I thought, oh, I don't really want to go all the way to America and have people I know there, because I feel like the experience would be different, because I might try and cling on to them, and we'd end up just not immersing ourselves because we knew each other. So I went with not such a high standard of school, but one that the education was supposed to be good, and the coach was saying all the right things, and the scholarship was good. So I ended up going to Missouri, and then yeah, I just it was just I like to I, it's not like I like to be the center of attention. I just like to do the different thing that people might not expect.
I know that person all too well, right? So but so it was like 4 years out, having to do all the trials. So where were you playing before that?
I played at a centre of excellence when women's or girls football was still through centre of excellences. It was Middlesex Centre of Excellence. So we were in the league with like Chelsea and Arsenal and all of them. So people ask me, oh, I thought you played at the highest level. Why didn't you play for Arsenal or Chelsea? And I was like, well, we played against them and we did all right. You just have never heard of the team that I played for. So yeah, that's always a fun one to explain.
Yeah, because it's all, again, it because they need a team. The towns need a team or the two attached to, and presumably there wasn't one there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all the same stuff, right?
Yeah. And arguably we had the best coaches out of every team, and we'd come home, well, we'd be at Arsenal on a Saturday and come home on a Monday and go to school. And we're like, oh, I heard you were playing Arsenal. How did you do? Did you get smashed? I was like, no, we didn't get smashed. We're just as good as them.
Yeah.
It's always the underdog.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And I had brief spells at Chelsea and Arsenal School of Excellence.
Oh, okay.
Or I went full time into rugby. We just played everything. And that was, well, I would have been 10, 11. So that was 20 years ago, 20 plus years ago, where they were just starting. Mm-hmm. So they kind of, we did get to do a launch when the Adidas Predator came out.
Okay.
Adidas came around and we got to take free kicks with the Predators. And then they were like, can we have the Predators back, please?
Oh, no. So you were wearing Predators that other people had definitely worn.
Yeah, they would go around all the things and then, you know, yeah. But like junior sport, like that sort of age as well, it's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it's your whole life, isn't it? You just... You come home from school, you get ready to go to training, and then you do it the next day, and then the weekend you're traveling up and down the country. Because thinking back on it, you're as an adult, I'm like, oh, I really like my free time and I like to relax. But when I was 12, I literally did everything.
Yeah,
hard to go back to that.
Yeah, no, I bet, and also like you think about from a parent's point of view, like it was, you know, me and my brother. And I just went where he played. So I just did what? So I do. It was, you're in the car and we're going there. I don't want to play football. Were you playing football? And then I had my sister who actually at one point she was playing rugby with us because we're all going in the car in the same place. But you've got a sister, right?
Yes, I have a non-identical twin sister.
Does she play football? You're very different, similar?
No, the complete opposite. She's just bought a house. I've just bought a gym.
Yeah. They. You can train and sleep in yours.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, her house is like 5 minutes down the road, so I can stay in her spare bedroom.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. And so was it, you said like your dad, whatever your dad says. So did dad do the football stuff with you?
Yeah. My mum would come to every game watch. And she, when my dad was at work, she would drive me to training, so I can't forget about the hours that she spent. But it was always my dad when we're on the drive home, oh, you didn't do this very well, you didn't do that very well, but you did this well. So it would always be his voice that I would hear to do with football, and then my mum would be like, oh yeah, you did well, I saw you didn't let that goal in and stuff like that. So that was kind
what
of
do you want for dinner?
Yeah. Can I wash your kit? Never my boots though, I always had to wash my own boots.
Good. Yeah. Because I remember playing with lads whose parents used to clean their boots for them.
No.
And they never worked hard enough. They didn't take it seriously enough. And that was a big no-no for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just couldn't handle that. Couldn't handle that. You're taking me back.
Cold November, washing your boots on a Friday because you've got a game on a Saturday.
So we weren't allowed in the car, muddy. So it was like, here's a black bag. You have to get changed in the car park and then sit in a black bag all the way home because you can't get the seats dirty. Like, get hosed down.
Nice.
So you're doing all that. You've ended up out in the States, and is that kind of through that? because every coach kind of has their story, their like Rocky montage moments. Like when was yours?
Well, I knew I wanted to do some sort of sport exercise. When I tore my ACL, so then I had to do the rehab process, and I throughout that period at the same time I was trialing for all these American colleges. I was like, well, I don't really know if they do one of the big factors in choosing which university to go to. I think in hindsight the education wasn't as good, so I had to kind of develop the knowledge and what I wanted to do as like kind of a side hustle, I guess, to my university, because everything was basic and prereq classes where you had to do art and music and stuff. So there wasn't a lot of time to focus on kind of building my coaching and like expertise and knowledge and stuff. But I think my rocky moment was in my internship. Literally the first day I walked in, and I'd heard a little bit about it, but it was just one of those ones where I had to tick a box, and I wasn't too keen on an internship because I was at university. It was my last year. I wanted to kind of make the most of it. But I walked in and I was in one session. I was like, I need to do this in the UK. There is nothing like it. I need to do this. And then from there, my dad came over a couple months later. I said, Dad, you have to come to my internship and see this kind of system. So yeah. He came and he was like, yeah, we've got to do it. We have to bring this here. So that was kind of my rocky moment where I started in my head planning where I am now, I guess.
Who were you interning with? Were you interning at the university?
No, it was a company called Redline Athletics. Uh-huh. It's a youth athletic development system where it's a franchise. So yep. Someone buys it. They pop up a huge unit like you can in America. They employ loads of young coaches who are really enthusiastic. And the system runs literally on a clockwork. The kids come in on the hour, they warm up for 10 minutes, they do some speed and agility, they do some skill practice, and then they go in the gym. Yeah. And I was like, this is everything they need. And they could like go around twice if they wanted. I was like, they loved it. And they were always encouraged to do a sport that wasn't their own. So there was baseball, there was volleyball, football or soccer and football. And they were always encouraged to do a different sport, which I really liked as well, because it meant that I got to learn how to not coach, but how to facilitate different sports, which was really fun.
That's awesome. That is so cool. And with that, I guess, you know, you said a lot of your study was a bit basic, and I want to go back to the journey through ACL. I think it's really important. Side note, I have to apologize to Krabby. I put he'd done two, but he'd actually done three. So I'm apologizing. yeah, three ACLs.
Just the one and done.
And so
I didn't want to do that.
So that experience, so you said like you checked yourself by saying facilitate these different sports, but you must have had to learn a lot about coaching in that time. Like you must have, you know, because obviously coaching someone is like nurturing a technique, right? And getting them autonomous in it. So you must have learned a lot there.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing, because they're all so young and it was also basic, the amount of transferable skills is insane. Or even just transferable drills. I would go into my brain and be like, I did that drill at football once, I'm going to make people do it in American football and stuff like that. So I think it's just being able to think on your feet and go, well, be presented with a problem like how to swing a baseball bat, I don't know, go home, watch a YouTube video, come to this kid who doesn't know how to swing a baseball bat and you sound like God because you've watched a YouTube video. And then just kind of moving it to different sports and
It's so good, because I mean my first true coaching experience, I was 13. I did a summer camp with Wasps rugby, and I was idolized by these young kids because it was just like a little bit older than them. Mm-hmm. And and you just learn, like, and you realize, like, that's just half the battle. Like, have to have these people that kind of respect you and they'll listen to you, and all you have to be is, like, just what, like you say, one YouTube video ahead.
Yeah.
and so from going from not really done a lot of coaching but lots of playing and being coached a lot, mm-hmm. your trajectory, you must have crammed in what, 5 years of coaching in 12 months, right?
Yeah, definitely. I'd done summer camps and stuff like that, so in terms of group management, that was never an issue. But the actual skill of being able to adapt on the fly to a kid that's just not understanding what you're saying, that was the biggest takeaway from that period of time. Oh, I just wish I had done the internship earlier. I wish I'd started coaching earlier, just because when I came back, I felt really behind. I wasn't, but I felt behind because I hadn't really coached many people and I hadn't really got the same knowledge base as my peers back in the UK. So I did feel behind, but I think it just made me step out of my comfort zone and coach things that I wouldn't necessarily have done if I was in a place where I could say no to coaching things.
Yeah, no, I'm there's so much in that. It's literally like, and a lot of credit to you there. Like, I'm not going to a university where my friends are going because I want to expose myself and I want to do things, like have a real experience. Well, I'm going to go and coach baseball. I'm going to go and do all these things because I want to get really good at this. So it breaks you out of that kind of structured thinking that we're really taught in the UK. Like, you have to do this and you do this and you'll get that. And we know that, yeah. Like that, especially coaching. And so it's a perfect segue that kind of structured thinking. It's like, I'm going to train, I'm going to go to trials and I'm going to go to America. And then an ACL happens.
ACL happened in 2012.
Okay, right. So again, so in that timeline, and when did you go to America?
2016.
2016. So yeah. So kind of right at the beginning of that journey.
Yeah.
And what was that like?
It was, well, in hindsight, I should have been, I guess, more not annoyed, but like annoyed that it happened, because I had played literally at the highest level I could have. I played for Centre of Excellences from when I started playing football until I went to America. We had UEFA A license coaches. We had the best pitches. We had the best facilities. But then we didn't have anything else. Like, I would go to school on a Monday and be like, oh, talk to the boys. And they're playing not high level football. And it's like, oh yeah, we had this speed coach come in. And we did like a speed session, we had conditioning, and I just remember being so annoyed. And there was actually at one point where the boys were allowed in the gym at school, and being the best football player in my school, boys and girls, I was like, well, how come they get to go and I don't? Yeah. So I think, yeah, just having, like, playing at the top level, but still not having all of the facilities and opportunities, I should have been more annoyed that, not that I tore myself, because that just happens and that happens to anyone, but just the fact that I had to go out, well, my parents had to go out and pay a lot of money for me to get better. That wasn't just embedded in the system. So that's, that's kind of where I think my origin story is. I want people to have a place to go where they can recover from these things, because it's really, if you get injured when you're 14 years old, and you're a girl, chances are you're going to stop. You're not going to come back. So that's where I started, I guess.
Yeah, that's where you can see, you can literally see why you've gone where you've gone with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I broke my leg, I was 19 when I broke my leg, and I had a rude awakening, like, as well at that point. Like, if you haven't got money to throw at physios, like, you're not getting the team I had just signed a deal with, and this was part-time, they're like, yeah, we come back in 4 months and we'll rehab you then.
Yeah,
all right, back to my shed at my parents' house, let's figure this thing out, shall we? And so you've kind of gone through this because it, injuries happen, but they create opportunity, and they give, they give the person who has had an injury a real, I think, a different perspective on the sport that they play. Especially like something so debilitating as an ACL. So when you came back off that, was that like, right, we're gonna go, we're doing this now as a part.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I just before I tore my ACL, I had the opportunity to play for England schools. So I'd literally just been picked as captain to play against Scotland. I'd got my England cap, and then I tore my ACL, and so I was gutted. But I didn't. I'd never been in a gym before I tore my ACL, so I guess I enjoyed the rehab process a little bit too much. I realized that, well, before I tore my ACL, I was the fittest on the team. I could run for as long as I needed. I would win all the fitness tests and stuff. But then after rehab, that wasn't the case. But I was still a better player. So I mean, I obviously got stronger. I actually worked on speed and agility, and I was a better player. Unfortunately, I did come back, and 3 months later tore my meniscus, but I couldn't get enough of rehab, so I just decided I need a little bit more. But yeah, I definitely came back a better athlete because, like you said, I did have more perspective of what it takes to be a football player.
It almost as well gives you an extra edge because you do look at you because all the things that you took for granted before, like I put myself, all my speed, I took that all for granted before I broke my leg. And it's like, well, that thing's not working anymore. So you then have to really chase it. You're then like, I have to put the work in for this stuff. And so then by the time you come back, you are 2.0. Because you've gone to the well again in well twice for you and your meniscus, but you come out stronger. And so let's flip right back to how was the football like in America? What was did you enjoy that part of it playing it? There's some there was a tone in your voice that I'm looking to.
The first year, obviously being a freshman and coming in, I played a lot because in America, the way the college system works, teams kind of go through ebbs and flows because obviously once a year, a huge group of players leave, they graduate and go, and then you have to kind of prep the next version of the team. And I was at, well, me and my class were at the worst time. We basically struggled through the entire 4 years. There was lots of that. In hindsight, and talking to my dad about it, he thinks that he feels really guilty about me going to this university just because of the way things ended up. He wished he'd done more homework on the coaching and that kind of thing, and it about phases of college soccer, and how if you go to a university that's on the up, you're going to have a better sporting experience. But I found myself in one that was going down. So first year, played a lot. He played me right back. I was a centre back, but maybe I got there and he thought I would have been taller. I don't know, because he'd never seen me. So he put me in right back. I did as best of a job as possible. But he had it in his head that he wanted me to play a 50-yard across the pitch ball. And I just did not have that in my locker. So every single week he'd be like, "Oh, try and play that ball, try and play that ball." I'm like, "I don't need to. I'm like a I'm a on the floor, pass it through lines and stuff like that." And he just did not get it. He just wanted the route one, hoof it over the defense, and then kind of let the fast strikers run onto it. So we clashed in that sense. I wanted to play the European style, which he recruited me for, and he wanted to play American, kick it to the fast girls and let them run with it. So that it was, I think he played me because he had to. And then going into sophomore year, he tried me at center mid, and that was good. He was like, "Oh my gosh, I'm onto a winner." And then that was fine. And then he started getting a few more athletic players. So I was kind of pushed out, but then still played quite a bit my junior. But then senior, it went downhill. Lots of controversy and lots of tough conversations that I had to have with people that I still don't like to have that hard conversations, but I had to stand up for myself. And it's not a conversation for a podcast, but that the last three weeks of my university soccer career, they were horrible. They were the worst thing ever. I got left behind on the last weekend, away weekend. So all my friends went, I didn't go. And then, my dad came over for my senior game, where in every single game up to then, all the seniors get to start, even if they don't stay on for that long. I didn't get to start. Yeah. He'd come all the way to America and I did not start or play. So that was, and I told him not to, I told my dad not to say anything because I wanted to go on the last away weekend. It didn't end up, so I had to have some hard conversations, but then it all worked out how it needed to work out, and I'm now able to have hard conversations.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it as well, you know, putting, and more power to you, big testament to you for, you know, because if you had your friends there from the UK, you would have rallied around them and you would have, you know, but it's you, backs against the wall, you're on your own, you've got to stand up for what you want. And, you know, if that means you don't play, you don't play. And that's sport as well, which is the thing that people don't talk about in sport. They don't, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's not fun, you know, but it, as you said, positive reframe. You've now just bought a gym, so there are conversations that need to be had there. So you finished a senior, and that year you were doing your internship. So you were all this coaching, the youth athletic system, which we both know is terrible here in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad you're doing something with that. And then you're like, you come back. What did you do next?
I worked in Tesco.
Yes.
Yeah, it was lockdown. I had to come home early, which I was quite thankful for, because it was either get stuck there for months because you can't fly back and forth, or come home. So I was ready to come home. Then I got home and I was bored. So I got a job at Tesco. I was a picker. So I would get to Tesco at 5 a.m. and then work until 2 p.m. And then I'd go home and I did a online PT course just because there was nothing else to do. So I did that. That took up most, well, it actually didn't. It took me like 2 weeks to do the theory. And then I had to wait for a year to do the practical. So just during the lockdown. So Tesco was the first place. After that, I got my own little studio gym. It was really small. You could literally only fit two people in it. Started building my client base out of there, working at some, I worked at a college football program. And then I was also playing for Watford at the time. And then transitioned into coaching from playing. That's where I went after university.
Yeah, cool. No, I like that. I had Tesco's. I've got Iceland and Subway on my record, on my resume. Nice. One had better food than the other. but it was all good. Do you know what's really surprises me? When I qualified as a PT, I had to do gym instructor, which was 8 weeks in a classroom full time, and then PT, which was 7 weeks in a classroom full time, and you had to log experience and all that sort of stuff. And then that was an opportunity that came for me after I broke my leg. Whereas now I know people that have done them online, and they're, no wonder there's
2 weeks.
No wonder there is an absence of good coaching in the private sector. And let alone actually universities don't produce good coaches, they produce academics. So I love that. I absolutely love that you know, again, it's to you taking initiative, filling your time, moving things forward, because you now are like, right, I'm going to open a little spot, We're very similar, you and I. Mine was my parents' shed. I painted it and did all of that. I'm like, Mum, want to train some clients out of here? My mum was my first client.
Oh.
Terrible. I was terrible.
Mom's my favorite client.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So, see, this is the thing. Like, my mum grew up, or I grew up with my mum telling me what to do. So then she tries to tell me how to train her. So this is just different. You're never winning, right? You're never winning.
No.
So that kind of path, and then speak to me a little bit about that process of you going from player, you're playing for Watford, to then deciding, hang on a minute, I don't really want to do this anymore.
I think I was really interested in coaching, and this was an opportunity to coach at a high level. And the head S&C coach at the time, I learned things from him, and it was a good environment to kind of, it was a safe environment to coach a big group of people, and it was women, it was players that I knew.
Yeah.
So it felt safe. And I, at the time, I wanted to coach more than I wanted to play. And now people are like, "Oh, do you not want to play? Do you not miss it?" And I say, "Yes, I do miss it, but I don't think I could play at a standard lower than the standard that I've played out my entire life, because
Yeah.
one, I'm too competitive." Well, no, that's it. That
That's
I'm too competitive.
it.
I have to play at a standard that is
Yeah,
what
I
I
get
find
that.
it. Well, yeah.
I get that 100%. That's why one of the reasons why I switched from rugby to play American football, because of the new challenge.
Yeah.
Like, I suck at American football. I did. Now I'm just injured. But the but I understand it gets to that point where you're like, I could do the same again, or I
Yeah.
could do something different. And again, it shows testament to your character. But would you ever have a kickabout? Power
Yeah.
play?
Yeah, my dad's company, they have football evenings sometimes, and I'll join in. And I've played with them growing up,
Yeah.
all of his work friends, and they don't go quite so easy on me anymore. I'll get a bash in the Power League walls.
Yeah. That's good. And so at least you can still, because the hardest part of letting go of a sport is then the fear of not being able to do it for enjoyment anymore.
Yeah,
And you find a
definitely.
lot of coaches have that. A lot of coaches do, as you said, I like coaching more than I liked playing at a certain point. Everyone gets there, but a lot of coaches give that up too soon because of a job hanging over their head. Oh, if you want to come and work for so and so academy on 15 grand a year, you have to give up your Saturdays and your Sundays. And so they sacrifice that. And it's nice to hear that you made that decision for you and to still be able to play that sport that you love. And now, so obviously, how many times have you nutmegged Tom? Have you played football with Tom yet?
I've played football with him once, where
Yeah.
I've actually seen him
Have a
run with a
yeah.
ball. But I do always do the stick nutmeg. But he knows now that if you lift your foot up, it doesn't count. So he always just says, "My foot was in the air." So it's no fun anymore, because he lies.
Oh, that's it. I love
Yeah.
that. That it just randomly popped into my head, that question. But so when you so you've got this small studio, and then now you've got not quite a studio. What's the kind of, I think I know, but what's the real purpose? What's driving you to do this? Like, you're a young lady, you're bloody very passionate, very, very motivated, very gutsy. Why have you taken on this thing that you have?
Because there's, in my opinion, nothing like it. So it's a big gap in what I perceive as the market. I think with all my experiences of coaching up to now, athletes are looking for something where they can have all the support they need from one place, because they don't always, well, the clubs can't always give it to them. But if they had maybe one additional place they could go, get all the coaching support, learn how to be a good athlete, learn how to kind of also cope after athletics or after their sport. That's a big thing for me, especially in America. People, well, especially girls, they play at college and then they're done. They don't do any sport. And I think just kind of nurturing the positive attitudes and positive experiences with exercise, which is obviously important for your whole life. I think just having a place for athletes is really big, because I'll just have to go into a commercial gym sometimes. And I do see athletes in there and I want to go to them. I say, you need an athlete gym. You need something where you can be supported. And I think all of the athletes that I coach and I have come across, although they might not think that they need it, they do. And I just, when they do realize they do need it, I want it to be a thing.
They don't know what they don't know yet, right?
No, exactly.
When you said you, at 14, you became a little meathead, basically, didn't you? And you're like, right, then you go to a place that has, you know, I remember watching videos on YouTube. This was before Facebook, and like watching, you know, college weightlifting programs. And you know, I was watching Louis Simmons and all those guys. I was like, why aren't there facilities like this in England? Like, why can't I? I had to train in my shed and like bargain on eBay for, like, I once drove an hour and a half for a door to put on the gym because I didn't have a door. And then I put it on a little MG. I had a little MG25, and this was a big UPVC door.
Nice.
And I tied it up with training bands. It was so illegal. But anyway, but that was the quest to train like an athlete. I had to try and build a space for it. And now I have my first gym membership ever. And I even struggle to warm up and do prep in the gym because there's nowhere to do it. And so from you at the age of 14, you're in America, you see this system, you bring dad over. Dad's like, right, come on, we're taking this home with us. You're kind of really feeling the thing that you didn't have.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
And where do you see it going?
I see it. I've had in my head 5 gyms.
Yo.
Yeah. But I think I want one hub. A hub with the football, the basketball, the baseball, the American football. I want it to be maybe not somewhere where athletes can go every week, but somewhere they can come, they can experience different sports, they can be educated through fun things on how to be an athlete, what an athlete looks like, and just having a place where even though people can't come every week, there is a place for them to be supported, and then have different kind of little hubs like this one. I'm saying little, it's huge compared to what I had before, but just spaces where they can come every week and they can have a coach support. So that's my vision evolving. Before, I just wanted 5 of these, but now I want something different.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's so needed and really refreshing. And like, I mean, there's even bigger conversation to be had, but especially around women in sport, I think is massive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and this is why you're going to do so well, and I know how well you're going to do, is because would 10-year-old Molly want to train with you?
For sure.
Yeah. And when, you know, I think about my sister as an example of this, she ended up, she's good 6 foot, easy. And she ended up playing basketball. She'll say 5'11", right? But she's tall. And she ended up getting to national basketball. And she went to a camp in America and all that sort of stuff. And then she stopped because it just wasn't the fashionable thing to what you play basketball. Yeah. Like she's thinking threes. Like she was really good. And so that happens a lot in more so, I believe, in female sport than male sport, because it's like girls in the playground and all that sort of stuff. But because the culture hasn't evolved that way. And I think having, you know, you and your purpose and, well, basically you driving that, you could infiltrate a lot of that cultural change.
I think with women in sport, it's always there's no, you can't see it past 20. You can't see, now you can. You have the female role models, you have women playing sport for a profession. But especially when I was younger, that wasn't a thing. You get as much out of it as you can, and then you transition to something else. Whereas boys have, well, not all boys, but boys have this arrogance that they are going to make it, and there is something for them to do as a job in sport. But yeah, I think that is evolving, that is changing, and girls do see a future for themselves in sport.
And it's all in the story. And it's perfectly what you say there. Like I remember my dad was a he played centre back actually, and he played with John Barnes and Les Ferdinand before they went pro. But that's a story. Like there aren't enough of those stories, especially like with women in football. We just, you know, a very good national team, but there aren't enough those stories of people that have played in the park. Because at the moment, they've all played in the park. Moving to that next generation where, you know, like the Centre of Excellence, now academies, and, you know, I know the friend of mine, and I will introduce you to him, is the head of Arsenal S&C. And they're a big programme. But there are now these pockets of kids, these girls, and that are just falling by the wayside that will stop. And hopefully, like the place like yours, will be able to sweep them up. Say, you can keep doing this, and I will show you how.
Definitely. My story is I played against and with Chloe Kelly. And every time I played against her, I think she scored maybe three goals against my back line in the whole however many 8 years that I played against her. So had her in my back pocket.
Love it. Love it. That's amazing. So we're gonna that's where we're stopping, because that's the killer line. So your gym, the den, well, for those listening, where are you based? What's the connection?
Based in Hertfordshire, Hemel Hempstead. For those of you who know Hertfordshire, right near the Magic Roundabout, the dreaded Magic Roundabout. Hertfordshire, it's pretty easy to get to. We'll be
Socials,
open soon. The Den, S and C.
then S&T. We'll put it in the show notes for everyone. But thank you so much for a wonderful conversation. And we'll definitely have you back on in like 6 months' time after it's opened, and we'll hear all about it.
Cool.